The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. It's time now for the Doctor's Lounge Show with Dr. Scott Barber.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Doctor's Lounge. I'm Dr. Scott Barber, and you're listening to me on America's Web Radio. It's great to be back in the studio. I've been out for a little bit, and I've missed a couple of shows because I've had some emergency patients that I needed to take care of, and I'm really glad to be back. I've been thinking a lot about the world that we live in, particularly as it relates to medicine and how we can advance the cause of free market medicine on this show. And the events of the last several years in terms of COVID and things that are happening at the World Health Organization with the increasing loss of individual freedom as it relates to our personal health care. Insurance costs are going through the roof. Coverage is getting more and more difficult. People have been having experiences about going to the doctor, going to the hospital, and not really being able to obtain treatment that they believe is right for them in regard to their view on health care. And so I'm constantly thinking about how we can get back to a world where we have a patient-centric medical institution, where the doctor's primary concern is to the patient, where the doctor-patient relationship is sacrosanct, and where we come up with healthcare solutions that are unique to the individual, because at the end of the day, that's the whole point. Medicine doesn't work in a one-size-fits-all, top-down type of a system. Medicine is very specific. It's unique to each individual patient based on their worldview, based on their health, based on their thoughts about things, based on their tolerance for risk, and a whole other plethora of issues. It's important that patients have the right to choose their own health care. And so I want to demonstrate a little bit about how we view the world we live in and the importance of thinking for ourselves. And I've gotten to this stage of my life where I'm always sort of reflecting on why do we think the things that we think? And we see it on TV all the time. You may look at a particular political candidate and you have opinions about them. And I ask myself, why do I think that way? Why do I believe these things? Because many things in this world I don't have a lot of information on, I don't think deeply about, I haven't read a lot about, but I still seem to have opinions about it. And I always am asking myself the question why that is. And the reality is, we are basically being propagandized all the time with everything we read, everything we see on television, everything that comes through our world through social media is being put there by people who have an agenda. And so there is an effort out there for us to be conditioned to think a certain way. And we do so at our own peril. And the whole experience that we have had with COVID and that we will continue to have has really highlighted for me the importance of all these techniques that are used against us and the importance of getting everybody to start thinking about the fact that we really need to preserve freedom of speech, and we really need to preserve the ability to think for ourselves. And I'm kind of want to connect some dots today to sort of demonstrate to everyone how we're manipulated, how we are influenced to believe the things that we believe, and we are influenced in a manner that benefits the people that are doing the influencing. And you know, nowadays you can think of things, a lot of it has to do with corporations. And I'm not against corporations, but I mean, big business corporations are trying to manipulate us to purchase their products. And then of course we have political actors that are trying to gain power, and healthcare is right in the center of all that because there is a lot of power and control that one can get from controlling our healthcare system. And I'm seeing this more and more clearly the older I get and the more experience I have. So we're living in a world where we are increasingly being censored. We are increasingly being conditioned to censor our own thoughts. And they're doing this by punishing people who dare to speak out. And when people are sharing their opinions, if these opinions are not approved by the ruling class, then people are at risk. And they can get deplatformed, they can get doxxed, and all sorts of things. And a lot of the techniques that are used to sort of control the way we think about things are they create terms, and they get us to try and buy into these terms. And one of the big ones these days is this idea of misinformation. They'll say, well, we had to censor this person because they were spreading misinformation. And I think a lot of people are kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, if they're spreading misinformation, we ought to shut them up because we don't want that misinformation getting out there and causing problems. And the reality is that there is no arbiter of truth out there. There is no one person or group of people, and I don't care who they label experts, which is another one of their techniques, that has the ability or the monopoly on truth. And so the only way for us to arrive at the truth is we need to be able to have access to information, and that's all information. And then we have to have the ability to deduce the facts that we hear and to understand the world that we see around us. And it's a competition of ideas that allows us to arrive at the truth. Now, the terminology that we're hearing these days that gets us to sort of back off and to not have attitude, I was going to play Dr. Fauci's famous quote that it's been proven that when you make it hard for people to live their lives, they lose their ideological bull. You know what I'm saying? That actually has been taken down, so I can't find it. I'm sure it's still out there. But, you know, that's just another example of Big Brother is out there censoring information because they don't want us to see certain things. But the point is that there is an effort out there to get people to cower, to get people to withhold their own opinions because they have fear of being canceled. They have fear of being doxxed. They have fear of being deplatformed, debanked, losing their jobs and all the rest of it. And the examples of that are legion. But the techniques that they use is they label things misinformation. They'll label something hate speech. They'll say, well, the science, you're going against the science in an attempt to embarrass you or to get you to back down because you think there's some powerful entity out there that is beyond your intelligence or your experience. And so you shut your mouth. They use terms like the experts, and we see this all the time, that nobody's ever allowed to offer an opinion anymore because, well, what, are you a biologist? We saw Ketanji Brown Jackson, when she was being confirmed to the Supreme Court, was asked, what is a woman? And she didn't want to answer the question because it was politically not beneficial to her at the time. So she says, well, I'm not a biologist. Like, you can't have an opinion about things unless you have a degree. And it's just a technique that is used to get you to stop thinking for yourself. And I'm here to encourage everyone, don't ever stop thinking for yourselves. And I'm going to give some examples of why we shouldn't trust any of these people that are using terms like misinformation, hate speech, the science, or experts, or best practices to get us to stop thinking out loud. And one of the techniques that has been used for a very long time is we often hear that, well, you know, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater thing. That has been disproven. That is actually not an accurate legal position. But it's constantly being used to get people to buy into the fact that, well, yeah, I guess some speech is not appropriate. And so if that's not appropriate, then I guess maybe I should keep my mouth shut if I'm spreading misinformation. And more than that, to get you to accept that other people that are out there offering opinions that go against the ruling class, to get you accept that that's okay. And what I need to show you guys is that it's not okay. And I'm going to give you plenty of examples that have happened over this past couple of years that show that the so-called experts or the people that were advocating for the science or were saying that there was hate speech or that you were going against best practices actually turned out to be wrong. And I'm going to show it to you in their own voice, in their own words. We're constantly being conditioned to accept certain narratives, and we need to be able to learn how to recognize that. And I'm often perplexed when we know that there are people out there that tell us things that turn out to be objectively untrue, that still have platforms and that people still listen. And, you know, there's a there's also sort of a difference between an honest mistake, right? Somebody's out there making an effort to share the truth and they get it wrong. And then there's another sort of person who's out there that is purposely trying to mislead you. And to me, that's the worst kind of lie, right? That's just an overt lie. They're trying to get you to believe something. And I'm going to show you that a lot of powerful people in our world, Anthony Fauci being one of the biggest, were not just wrong, but they were telling us outright lies. And when people go and tell us outright lies, especially about very important things, those people should not be listened to, because the risk of hearing future lies is so high. Now, in order to have the ability to think for yourself, you have to have access to information. You have to have access to all information. And so if we're talking about the scientific community, we need to be able to hear all the doctors, and all the people that have knowledge in that space. We need to be able to hear what their views are on a particular subject so that as interested individuals, we can gather that information and work through it ourselves and deduce information. And that's what's going to allow us to arrive at the truth. And it's just so important for people to understand that, particularly when it comes to medicine, perspective and individual points of view are so very unique. I always like to use the analogy of the top of the muffin. Shout out to my great buddy who sent me my top of the muffin t-shirt, and you know who you are. But the top of the muffin refers to a story that happened in my life when I first got out of college. I got one of my first jobs working as a fitness instructor at the San Francisco Bay Club. And there was a coffee shop across the street. And I would commonly, you know, we would go across the street, one of my coworkers and I, and get coffee and a muffin. And one day she said she wanted to split a muffin. So I went across the street. I got the coffee. I got a muffin. And I split the muffin. I took the top off and I took the top and I gave her the bottom half of the muffin and I gave her the bigger half. So in my mind, I was being, you know, a real gentleman and I was being magnanimous, giving her the bigger piece. And she looks at me and she's like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "What do you mean? What am I doing?" She said, "Well, you took the top of the muffin." And I said, "I know, but I gave you the bigger half. I like the top of the muffin." And she looks at me and she goes, "Everybody likes the top of the muffin." And I remember thinking, and I think of it every day, how funny it was. I really thought in my mind that I was benefiting her, that I was being the bigger person, that I was giving her the best part of the muffin. And it didn't dawn on me that, like, yeah, I like the top of the muffin, that everybody likes the top of the muffin. And the point of that anecdote is to tell you that you cannot have arbiters of things that are important to you. You can't have leaders, oligarchs, a ruling class, a medical community that makes decisions for you because they don't know who you are. They don't know how you think and they don't know what you like. And more importantly, they don't have insight into what they are doing, right? I did not think I was doing her wrong. In fact, I thought I was doing her right. And not only that, I've kind of felt like she kind of owes me. Like, I'm really taking good care of her, giving her the big piece of the muffin, and she kind of owes me. Well, it's kind of funny and not as big a deal when we're talking about coffee and a muffin, but when we start talking about the education of your kids, or we talk about the healthcare that you're going to get, or, you know, more importantly, that your kids are going to get, we talk about how much money you're going to be paying in taxes. And we talk about the way the world is going to work. And increasingly, we have all of these crazy thoughts out there and ideas, you know, coming out of places like the World Economic Forum, where, you know, they want to ban meat and they want everything to be electrical. And there's this big push towards green energy. These are monumental decisions that are going to have massive impact on you and your families for generations to come. And to not have a seat at the table is just absolutely unacceptable. And you might be asking yourself, "I thought this show was called The Doctor's Lounge." Well, medicine is one of the primary tools that people are using to gain power over us. And we need to demand free speech. The founding fathers of this country that created the greatest society in human history. And I know there's a lot of people out there, "Oh, we had slaves and we didn't do the Native Americans proper," and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, because we're a country made up of human beings. We're a country made up of sinners. But when you look at all the societies that ever existed, the people that had the most freedom, the most ability to succeed and to create wealth and peace and prosperity has been the United States of America, even with all our flaws. And so we want to take something that is beautiful and awesome, and we want to build on it and improve it. And in order to do that, we need to retain our freedoms. We need to retain our ability to have, first of all, free speech. The genius of our founding fathers was understanding that in order to maintain a free society, the most important part was free speech. And so I've seen through medicine, through the last couple of years, I've been a victim of censorship. I'm probably still going to be a victim of censorship. And we've seen a lot of people that have been canceled, doxed, lost their jobs and all sorts of things because they were denied their freedom of speech and they refused to accept that. And so in order to preserve this great nation, in order to move in a direction that's going to be beautiful and a place that you're going to want for your children, we have got to fight for free speech. Now, Elon Musk is here being interviewed by a BBC reporter, and I want you to hear how he expertly takes apart this person's attacks on him. And we're going to kind of listen to it. And I want to say it's a few minutes long, but it's really important. And there are some important things here. And one of the first techniques I want you to see is when we're debating people these days, one of the most difficult things is we can never get an idea of what the other person's position is. You know, if we talk about abortion, for example, that's a big deal and it's coming up in this new election. You want to talk to somebody who's pro-choice, and they say, well, I'm pro-choice, and you may be pro-life. If you're having a discussion with this person or a debate with this person, you can never get them to understand, or you never can get them to admit or to define what is their cutoff point. So, you know, are you talking about abortion after conception? Never. Are you saying that you can't have an abortion before a certain time period, say the first trimester? Are you talking about, can you kill the baby after it's born? They will never give you a definition of what their position is because it makes it something that you have to defend. And so we often see that we have difficulty debating people and arriving at a consensus because we can't agree on the basic facts of the situation. We can't agree this is an apple. You know what I mean? So I want you to listen to Elon Musk. The first thing he does is try to get the person to define his position or to say exactly what he thinks. And the BBC reporter refuses to do it. And this is such an excellent encapsulation of all that is going on in this world. I want to start the show with it. So let's listen to this.
No, when I came,
I say, sir, that you don't know what you're talking about.
Really?
You know, who's to say that something is misinformation? Who's the arbiter of that? Is it the BBC?
You're literally asking me.
Yes.
Well, no, you are the arbiter on Twitter, because you own Twitter.
Yes, I'm saying, who is to say that one person's misinformation is another person's information? At the point at which you say that there is, this is misinformation, like, who is going to decide
that? Misinformation can be dangerous, that it can cause real-world harms, that it can potentially cause...
Yeah, so the point I'm trying to make is the BBC itself has, at times, published things that are false. Do you agree that has occurred?
I'm quite sure the BBC have said things before that turn out to not be true.
Right.
In its, whatever it is, 100-year history, I'm quite sure.
Yes. Even if you aspire to be accurate, there are times when you will not be.
So the guy, the BBC reporter, is trying to say that, you know, you can be dangerous and the things that you let on Twitter is going to lead to problems. And Elon Musk is simply pointing out, like, okay, you're the BBC. He's saying, who is the arbiter of truth? And the guy's kind of stunned. He's like, I don't know what the arbiter of truth is. And then he kind of says, well, you're the arbiter of truth at Twitter. And Elon Musk is like, well, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about who's the arbiter of truth in general. And the guy's stunned. He doesn't know what to say. And then Elon quite correctly points out, listen, the BBC's been wrong about stuff, so are they the arbiter of truth? I want you to see how this continues to get this BBC reporter's head to explode.
I've spoken to people very recently who were involved in moderation, and they just say there's not enough people to police this stuff, particularly around hate speech in the company. Is that
what hate speech are you talking about?
Okay, he's saying that Twitter doesn't have enough people to police all the misinformation, and now he's pivoting to hate speech. Now he's using the term hate speech because all of us don't want hate speech, whatever that is. I mean, it's hate, and we don't want hate. So he's trying to use this general term, and Elon Musk is like, okay, give me an example. Watch.
When you use Twitter, right, do you see a rise in hate speech?
I mean, just a personal anecdote, like, what did you, I don't. Personally, my For You, I would see I get more of that kind of content, yeah, personally. But I'm not going to talk to the rest of, for the rest of Twitter.
You see personally. More hate speech personally?
I would see more hateful content in that.
Content you don't like or hateful? What do you mean, describe a hateful thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just content that will solicit a reaction, something that may include something that is slightly racist or slightly sexist, those kinds of things.
So you think if something is slightly sexist, it should be banned?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying anything.
I'm just curious. I'm trying to say what you mean by hateful content, and I'm asking for specific examples. And you just said that if something is slightly sexist, that's hateful content. Does that mean that it should be banned?
Well, you've asked me whether my feed, whether it's got less or more, I'd say it's got slightly more.
That's what I'm asking for example.
Okay, so you guys got to understand this whole BBC interview with Elon Musk is about the BBC doesn't like that Elon Musk took over Twitter because Elon Musk isn't censoring. And because the BBC, in my opinion, tends to be a mouthpiece for the ruling class, they don't like the idea that people are out there getting information and being able to make decisions for themselves and being able to arrive at the truth. Because the BBC wants you to believe in their truth. They want to be the ones that set the narrative about the way the world works, and they want to present you only the information to get you to believe what they believe. Elon took over Twitter, and he's allowing free speech so that all voices can be heard, at least more so than before. I don't think it's fully free, but I don't think that's Elon's fault. I think that's more a function of there's still people who believe in censorship that still work at Twitter. And so while things are improved, there's still some under the table stuff going on. But the whole point here is this guy is trying to get Elon Musk in a gotcha to say that you've taken over Twitter, you've allowed free speech, and it's caused a problem. And Elon's trying to say, well, what's the problem? And he kind of goes, well, I believe there's more hate speech. Listen to how this thing unfolds.
Can you name one example?
I honestly don't even.
Name a single example.
I'll tell you why, because I don't actually use that for you feed anymore, because I just don't particularly like it. A lot of people are quite similar.
You've seen more hateful content, but you can't name a single example, not even one.
I'm not sure I've used that feed for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
How did you see that hateful content?
Because I've been using Twitter since you've taken over for the last 6 months.
Okay, so then you must have at some point seen that you for you hateful content. And I'm asking for one example.
Right.
And you can't give us a moment.
And I'm saying...
Then I say that you don't know what you're talking about.
This BBC reporter, he's got one agenda here. The agenda is that the world is a worse place because Elon took over Twitter and he's not censoring speech in the way that the BBC would like it. And so he's saying, you took over, and now that you took over, it's more hate speech. And Elon goes, give me an example. And he's like, well, you know, I don't use it that much. And Elon's like, well, if you don't use it, how do you know hate speech? And he's kind of like, oh, that doesn't work. I mean, I used to use it for 6 months before I stopped using it. And so Elon's back to, okay, then give me one example. And the guy can't do it.
Really? Yes, because you can't give me a single example of hateful content, not even one tweet. And yet you claimed that the hateful content was high.
Well,
that's a false.
No, what I claimed...
You just lied.
What I claimed was there are many organizations that say that that kind of information is on the rise. Now, whether it has a...
Give me one example.
I mean, the Strategic Dialogue Institute in the UK, they will say that. So
people will say all sorts of nonsense. I'm literally asking for a single example, and you can't name one.
Right, and as I already said, I don't use that feed. But
how did you know that? I don't think
this is getting anywhere.
You literally said you experienced more hateful content, and then couldn't name a single example.
Right, and as I said,
that's absurd.
I haven't actually looked at that feed.
Then how would you know if it's hateful?
See, this guy's brain is melting down because when you are in the ruling class and you live in a world where people are not free to share their opinions, you don't have to defend yourself. And when they get put in a position where they actually have to defend their beliefs, they can't do it. This guy's caught in this rut of circular thinking of, there's more hate speech, so therefore you taking over was terrible. And Elon's like, well, give me an example. And then he's like, well, I don't actually watch or I don't look at Twitter anymore, so I can't see it. And he's like, okay, well, then how can you know? And he goes, oh, because, I mean, I used to look at it. And he's like, all right, well, give me an example. The guy cannot come up with an example. And this is the world that they live in. And listen, it's just not about free speech and Twitter. It's about everything that we believe in this world, about you know, let's talk about Trump is guilty of whatever it is, 34 felonies, and he's going to jail. Well, let's talk about it. Can anybody out there name any one of the felonies he committed? And the answer is none of us can, right? I'm a pretty smart guy. I have no idea what he got convicted of, but it's 34 of them. And 34, not one, not two, not three, 34 convictions. And you have to understand, it's the tool of the lack of free speech that allows them to get away with putting these narratives forward. Whenever they're confronted with having to defend their position, they can't do it. Listen to this.
Because I'm saying that's what I saw a few weeks ago. I can't give you an exact example. Let's move on. We only have a certain amount of time.
I can't win, so let's move on.
Well, COVID misinformation.
All right. Amazing. You've
changed the COVID misinformation.
Has BBC changed its COVID misinformation?
The BBC does not set the rules on Twitter, so I'm asking you.
No, I'm talking about the BBC's misinformation about COVID.
I'm just asking you about, you changed the labels, the COVID misinformation labels. There used to be a policy and then it disappeared. Why do that?
Well, COVID is no longer an issue. Does the BBC hold itself at all responsible for misinformation regarding masking and side effects of vaccinations? And not reporting on that at all? And what about the fact that the BBC was put under pressure by the British government to change its editorial policy? Are you aware of that?
This is not an interview about the BBC.
Oh, so. You thought it wasn't?
I see now live on Twitter Spaces. I am not a representative of the BBC's editor.
I mean, this to me is just one of the great interactions, because The BBC reporter obviously had an agenda to discredit Twitter. And the reason they want to discredit Twitter, or I guess I should say X now, is because they don't like the idea that X is allowing free speech more so than other entities. And we can see that when they are confronted with open debate, they cannot defend their positions. He immediately goes into, well, you took over and there's more hate speech. Elon's like, give me an example. Oh, I can't think of an example. I don't use it. Okay, well, then how do you know? And it's like, okay, never mind. Let's move on. Let's go to COVID misinformation. And then Elon's like, all right, well, what about BBC's COVID information? And he's like, well, this is an interview of the BBC. This is us in the ruling class persecuting you guys in the plebe class. And so, you know, what you see is how freedom of speech throws a wrench into their narrative. Now, we're going to get way more into this, because I'm going to show a whole bunch of examples of how the ruling class didn't just get it wrong, but they actively lied to us, and they tried to limit our free speech in an effort to be able to promote their narrative. And now that we caught them with their hand in the cookie jar, they're trying to clean things up. And unless we learn to think for ourselves and to interpret information and to demand freedom of speech, we're going to find ourselves in a lot of big trouble. We're going to go to commercial right now. We'll be right back in a few minutes. You're listening to Dr. Scott Barber on America's Web Radio. This is the Doctor's Lounge. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Hal Schurz from the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. I want to thank you for your support. Our show is brought to you by the Doctor Patient Care Foundation, which is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. Our website is www.d4pcfoundation.org. We need you to support our organization so that we can continue to bring you this show and the information that you need so that you can support the healthcare of you and your family.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. I'm Dr. Scott Barber, and you're listening to us on America's Web Radio. We just finished listening to Elon Musk destroy this BBC reporter who was trying to berate Elon for allowing free speech on his site and talk about how it's made the world a worse place with misinformation about COVID and hate speech. And Elon pointed out the guy couldn't give a single example and actually said, well, I don't even know what we're doing here. This is not about the BBC. This was, we're in the ruling class. We were here to destroy you and to berate X. And Elon wasn't having any of it. And I think what he did was he helped us understand how do we interpret the facts of the world around us and how do we spot it when we're being played. And one of the important techniques he used there was to get the authors or the BBC reporters' position stated clearly. And so the BBC reporter started off using a buzzword, hate speech. And since none of us wants to be a hater, we all loathe to be thought of as a hater. The BBC reporter uses the term, well, you guys have been allowing hate speech because you're evil. And Elon's like, okay, well, give me an example. Show me what you mean. And the guy couldn't do it. Okay. Now, back during the COVID pandemic, there's a lot there. There's so much to unpack there. There was a political agenda going on. Foreign interaction taking place. And, you had basically President Trump at the time, having one of the great presidencies in terms of we had the greatest economy in, more than 50 years, maybe ever. We had the lowest black unemployment, the lowest female unemployment. We had world peace. We're getting out of foreign wars. I mean, a lot of great stuff was happening. The tax cuts, one of the biggest tax cuts in American history, which benefited the working class person. And I know the left is constantly trying to rewrite history and say that it only benefited the rich. And it's been shown over and over again that it actually benefited the working class and the poor more, benefited everyone, but it was the working class and the poor more. And I think people are starting to see that in their own life experience. You know, filling up your gas tank is painful, and certainly going to the grocery store is painful. And so, there was a narrative that was being spewed at that time. And in my opinion, COVID was a biological weapon that was released by the Chinese Communist Party to take down Donald Trump and the United States during a time when he was being very successful. Now, you don't have to believe that, and this is just my opinion, but you have to also understand that narrative dovetails into you had Pfizer and a lot of these pharmaceutical companies that stood to make a ton of money. And so they benefited from making sure everybody got COVID. And then you had political players that benefited by using COVID to promote mass mail-in balloting, which benefited, certain political parties. And so you see a lot of different power players that had their objective sort of coalesce together. And I think this created a tsunami of forces that really went out of their way to push everybody getting vaccinated. Now, somebody like myself, just a regular old doctor, just kind of looked at the facts. And, the very first thing popped into my head was, all right, we got this new virus coming down, COVID, SARS-CoV-2. And, being a doctor and having a medical practice, I needed to start learning about it. So I started studying. And I started gathering information from South Korea and Italy because we were able to get documentation of the types of people that were getting infected. And I could start to see for myself who was vulnerable. Because one of the things we know about these respiratory viral diseases is that they attack different people over time. Sometimes they get young people, sometimes they get old people, sometimes they get people in the middle. And so as a doctor who went to medical school and was just trained to look at these things, my first instincts were, who is this getting? Who's vulnerable? So I started looking at the data myself, and it became obvious to me that young people seemed to be very bulletproof, as in very bulletproof, so as safe as possible. And as it turns out, the CDC now points out that COVID is less of a problem to your children than the typical flu virus. So that to me was a good piece of information. And then it became obvious to me by looking at the data. And listen, this is not my opinion. This is not like my own research that I did. This was just me looking at available data. It became obvious to me that the people that were at risk was older people with comorbid conditions. And so I started talking with other doctors who were arriving at the same conclusions. And then, not having really looked at this before, I started noticing things like early treatment with zinc, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and that kind of stuff. And then we all kind of know the way this thing played out. But what really struck me at the beginning was nobody in the medical community wanted to hear about these other early treatments, which just seemed weird to me. Like, why wouldn't you want to hear it? I started noticing that people that were bringing up were sort of getting, canceled and doxed and pressured not to say these things. And then watching Fauci, who was the chief bureaucrat who was pushing all of this stuff, behave in such a weird way, saying things that were demonstrably just false, like masks work. Like, it was just so stupid. And then, as Elon Musk did, okay, you want to say hate speech. What do you mean hate speech? And give me an example. So when they would say masks work, I'd be like, okay, give me the definition of a mask, and they never would, right? They didn't want to ever, if you think about it, they never really defined what a mask was. It was basically anything over your face. And I thought that was incredibly unscientific and stupid, and that's what got my mind going. So anyway, just to kind of give you an idea of what kind of forces you're up against, this is a really important thing. So early on in the pandemic, they put this commercial together with Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama wearing, presidential suits, and they're standing there and they're making this commercial. Okay. So listen to this. So they're standing in front of, it looks like the World War II Memorial.
COVID-19 vaccines are available to millions of Americans, and soon they will be available to everyone.
The science is clear. These vaccines will protect you and those you love from this dangerous and deadly disease.
They could save your life.
So we urge you to get vaccinated when it's available to you.
That's the first step to ending the pandemic and moving our country forward.
It's up to you, our fellow Americans.
So right now you have to understand, they're standing here at the World War II Memorial. They all have suits on. They're looking super presidential, American flags hanging everywhere. And we got three former presidents. And when you really think about the imagery of that, they're trying to use a lot of these techniques, right? Experts, people of power, they know more than you. And they're telling you, get the vaccine. And I'm thinking to myself, well, gosh, when I was in medical school, they kind of taught me that we don't know the full ramifications of a vaccine for like 10 years till, you got to give it for 10 years, kind of see what happens before we know everything, so that when one takes a vaccine, that, it's kind of a risk benefit analysis. And here we got these these superpower players, telling us like to get vaccinated. And I'm thinking to myself, man, this seems kind of irresponsible, right? So now what I want to do is I want to play this montage of all of our talking heads, news outlets and things like that, flip-flopping on issues, surrounding COVID. So let's start with this, and we're going to kind of go through this piece by piece. So we start off with Bill Gates.
Not just protecting themselves, but reducing their transmission
on MSNBC
to other people and allowing society to get back to normal.
We can kind of almost see
Michelle Walensky.
We're vaccinating so very fast. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick.
Getting vaccinated and getting a booster shot when eligible can save your life and protect you and your family and friends from getting seriously ill and spreading infection.
What do you think the probability is? 80%?
Personally, I think it's 100%. I think that there's a reduction in transmission
of COVID if you have these vaccinations.
Biden.
We have all the vaccines we need. We just need our people to take it. A, for their own protection, for the protection of their family, but also to break the chain of transmission. You want to be a dead end to the virus. So when the virus gets to you, you stop it. You don't allow it to use you as the stepping stone to the next person.
Now we know that the vaccines work well enough that the virus stops with every vaccinated person.
It stops.
A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. The virus does not infect them. The virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else.
You stupid moron, if you don't care.
It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
But when we look at the emergency use authorization, which is right on the screen, if you look what it says under transmission, this is what was known the moment they were making those things. Can I have the next slide, please? What was known was that the data are not there, limited to assess the effects of the vaccine against transmission of SARS-CoV-2. They had no idea. They had no idea if it would stop the infection, yet they were making those statements on the news.
Plus, the Pfizer COVID vaccine tested.
So what they're saying here, when you look at this montage, is you had people like Bill Gates and Rachel Maddow and, you know, CNN and all these people saying it stops. Rochelle Walensky, head of the CDC, Peter Marks, all of these experts saying unequivocally it stops. You can't get the disease. It's safe and effective. Get your vaccine. And it's kind of like, man, that doesn't seem very responsible. Now we're having congressional hearings and they're pointing out, wait, the data wasn't there. So we know for a fact that they were making these claims without having the evidence. And here we have one of these European Union representatives asking one of the scientists at the pharmaceutical company, did you have the information? So listen to this.
On stopping the transmission of the virus before it entered the market. If not, please say it clearly. If yes, are you willing to share the data with this committee? And I really want a straight answer, yes or no, and I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much.
Regarding the question around, did we know about stopping immunization before it entered the market? No. We had to really move at the speed of science.
You have the European Union Parliament meeting, and one of the Parliament members asked the question to the Pfizer representative, did you guys have evidence that this vaccine stopped transmission? And she was like, no, we didn't have that evidence, but we had to move at the speed of science. You see how they constantly retreat back to their safe places of using terms like, well, you can't say it because it's hate speech and you have to censor because we're talking about the science and you're not an expert and best practices and don't spread misinformation. Like, they can't think out loud. They can't think their way through these problems. And you need to not be like that. You need to be able to say to yourself, I am going to use my own individual thought processes and I'm going to figure out information on your own. You know, when I first started out in business, I'm going to tell you guys the truth here. I had absolutely no knowledge of business. I took like one economics class my freshman year when I was at UCLA, and I want to say I got like a D. I mean, I really didn't do well, and I laugh at myself now. I think it was because the economics class had such an influence of left-wing thought that I just couldn't get it. But regardless, I didn't have a lot of information on economics or business or anything like that. I just kind of started my own medical practice, and I really didn't have any concept of what I was doing. And that probably went a long way towards my first practice going bankrupt. But I do remember that when we would have meetings with bankers and all this kind of stuff, they would start talking and I would think to myself, God, this is so embarrassing. I have no idea what they're saying. And if I open my mouth and ask questions, then everybody's going to know how stupid I am. And I don't want to do that. So I would keep my mouth shut and I'd allow these people to lead me down the primrose path. And now, as a much older, more experienced person, I understand that usually when people are talking in a way that you don't understand, they're usually full of it. All right. People who use big words and are trying to, you know, make things sound super complicated, I don't trust those people. And nowadays, I have the confidence when people come to me and I don't understand a business situation, I'll just say, I don't get it. Explain it to me like a four-year-old. And until I get it, I'm not participating. And you guys should learn to do the same. And it's the same. It doesn't matter if you're talking about business or if you go into a doctor. And I think we've all had that experience where we've gone to a doctor who presents things in a way where it's like, well, I'm just too smart, you're just too stupid, I'm too educated, and you're not. You can't understand what I'm telling you, so just do what I tell you. Like, you should run from those people, okay? If a doctor can't explain what your problem is in a manner that you understand, then you need to get yourself a new doctor. Now, you know, we saw all these kind of, I'm just going to call them outright lies, right? We have the evidence that they did not have evidence to support the claims that they were making. These were very powerful people that had a lot of influence. And, you know, I think they have some culpability in all the stuff that went down. Now, listen to Chris Cuomo, who at the time was working for CNN. I want you to listen to him and Don Lemon talk about ivermectin, okay? And this is using their position as the smart media people, and we're just the dumb plebs and dumb morons that won't get on board. I want you to listen to the way these guys talk about ivermectin.
People who are getting, injecting drugs for animals and horse.
And people telling them to.
Oh my God.
What person? You know, you talk about, like, you know, cancel culture and who to shame. Ivermectin, a dewormer, really?
They are shaming themselves. No one has to shame them. They're shaming themselves.
No, they need to be shamed.
Yeah.
They need to be called out and shamed,
yeah.
Brother.
People who are getting, injecting drugs for animals and horse.
And people telling them to.
Oh my God.
What
it twice.
Person? You know, you talk about, like, you know, cancel culture and who to shame. Ivermectin, a dewormer, really?
They are shaming themselves. No one has to shame them. They're shaming themselves.
No, they need to be shamed.
Yeah.
They need to be called out and shamed,
yeah.
Brother.
Okay, so first of all, ivermectin is a medication that is actually used as a horse dewormer, but of course in different doses. And then there's also this antiparasitic medication is also used in human beings and actually won the Nobel Prize, I think, in 2015 for its use in human beings. So it's a well-known drug to treat problems in human beings. It's a normally accepted drug. It's not weird to take it. And ivermectin has lots of data out there to show that it is effective at preventing the transmission of respiratory-like illnesses, including COVID. And so when I started seeing stuff like this, I knew this to be true. And the thing that really struck me as odd is I'm not the only doctor in the world. So, of course, lots of doctors know this information. Why is nobody speaking up? And I'm here to tell you a lot of it had to do with doctors just being afraid to open their mouths because it was going against the ruling class, and they were afraid of cancellation, license, losing their license, losing their jobs. And another important fact here is you got these two talking heads at CNN just mocking something that they know nothing about. And these are the first people that if you say anything, they'll be like, well, are you a biologist? Like, you're not able to comment on anything because you don't have the approved degree that they accept and they don't recognize you as an expert. But yet these two clowns are here mocking people for thinking that ivermectin is something effective because it's a horse dewormer. These idiots, they're shaming themselves in public. And, you know, the other thing that got me was, you know, Rolling Stone infamously came out with this fake story where, you know, gunshot wounds and things like that, people were dying in emergency rooms because the doctors couldn't take care of other traumas because they were dealing with all the people coming in with poisoning from ivermectin. And it was just such an absurd story. As soon as I saw it, I knew it was ridiculous. And then it turned out that it was a complete fraud and it was a complete lie. And you have to ask yourself, you have the CDC, people like Fauci, you have Rachel Walensky, you know, you have your government bureaucrats that are supposed to be looking out for us. Why did they not correct the record on that? I mean, it was a time when ivermectin could have been useful and, you know, nobody allowed for a correction of the record. This Rolling Stone article went around and turned out to be a complete lie. But do you hear any of these talking heads at any news outlets, you know, saying like, well, Rolling Stone has completely discredited themselves and that you shouldn't listen to any of their stories? No, you don't see that. And Rolling Stone will be used in the future too when the ruling class wants to present a narrative. And so I'm asking you people, as independent thinkers, to just ask yourself, why would you believe a story in Rolling Stone? I mean, that's not a mistake, right? They knew this wasn't true. It's so absurd. And yet when these types of people get busted in these lies, they just move forward, you know? Now, Cuomo's changed his tune a little bit because now he's got vaccine injury. And so I want you to listen to this guy. And listen, I still think Cuomo's a tool, to be honest with you. That's just my opinion. I think I think this because, in my opinion, he says things that he knows to be false. And I just don't like that in people. He's trying to push a narrative. He knows them to be false. And now he's trying to change his tune, but he still has the arrogance of somebody who thinks they know everything they're talking about. Let's listen to him now. I forget the name of this podcast. I'm going to try and look at it and give it some credit. But they're interviewing Cuomo about his vaccine injury. I want you to listen to how his tune has changed about ivermectin. Coming on. Stand by.
I'll tell you something else that's going to get you a lot of hits. I am taking a regular dose, you know, whatever. They're trying to build up of ivermectin. Ivermectin was a boogeyman early on in COVID.
You can talk about it.
That was wrong.
Yeah, ivermectin was a boogeyman. I wonder why it was a boogeyman. Maybe because we had idiot journalists on TV lying about it, him being one of them. I mean, gosh darn, give me a break with these people.
We were given bad information about ivermectin.
We were given bad information? You guys lied about it. It's not like, you know, he's trying to rewrite history here as if, you know, some sort of mistake was made and everything like that. No mistake was made. Everything was known back then, and it was people like him that perpetrated the lie because he wanted to.
The real question is, why? Everyone's going to say, Joe Rogan was right. No, Joe Rogan was saying, yeah, he was right, but that's not what matters. What matters is the entire clinical community knew that ivermectin couldn't hurt you. They knew it, Patrick. I know they knew it. How do I know? Because now I'm doing nothing but talking to these clinicians.
So this guy that was on CNN that was berating people like me, by the way, I was talking about it from day one, right? I think most of you on this show know that. So he's basically admitting that I was right and he was wrong. And he wants to know why. He's perplexed. Why? I wonder why they didn't speak up. Yeah, because people are being censored. And people are losing their jobs and being doxxed and all the rest of it. That's why, because there are real world consequences these days for telling the truth, which goes back to the beginning of the show. And what I'm trying to tell you guys is we have to allow free speech. We have to allow for pursuit of the truth. And we can't persecute people who are sharing information that they in good faith believe is the truth, because there are people like him that are working in bad faith. And like that guy from the BBC that are working in bad faith to shield you from the truth because they want to promote their own narrative.
Who at the time were overwhelmed by COVID and they weren't saying anything.
Oh, we were overwhelmed by COVID. That's what it was.
But it's cheap. It's not owned by anybody. And it's used as an antimicrobial, antiviral in all of these different ways. It has been for a long time.
For malaria for over almost 20 years.
Yeah. So, and my doctor, who is now my doctor, was using it during COVID on her family and on patients. And it was working for them. So they were wrong to put.
Okay. So he says the quiet part out loud now, too. He doesn't even know it. It's cheap, right? And it's effective. So for pharmaceutical companies, there has always been this point of view that I share that cheap, highly therapeutic treatment methods are frowned upon because pharmaceutical companies want to be able to sell you super expensive treatments in lieu of these cheap choices. And the real importance for this comes from when you look at Medicare and Medicaid, right? As they expand the number of people that are on government health care, that means that pharmaceutical companies can then just go to Medicare and Medicaid and take that tax money with no input from the doctor. So let's say you're a Medicaid patient and you come in and they want to, you know, you get a doctor that you train to prescribe a super drug. Let's just call it that. You want to get them to provide super drug, and super drug costs $10,000 a dose. So you control the doctor by employing him and you force him to say, hey, anybody with this disease, you're going to prescribe super drug, and you're not going to be allowed to prescribe any cheap, simple medications that are safe. You can't do that. You have to prescribe super drug. And so the pharmaceutical company gives kickbacks to the government and these agencies. We've seen it, right? This is just the pattern. And then they can charge $10,000 a dose. Now, if we had private health care, right? And I was using my own money, and you tried to sell me a drug for $10,000 for a disease that I'm looking at, and I'm thinking I'm not really susceptible to that disease, so I'm going to make the decision I'm not going to spend my money on it. Well, then they wouldn't be able to make the sale. But when you have a third-party payer like the government and there's no input from the patient, it's a lot easier to get that money. And that, in a nutshell, is the scam. And he just said it. He just made that point, Chris Cuomo, that the that it was cheap and safe and effective. And that's why they didn't want you to use it.
Scared on that. Didn't know that at the time. Know it now. Admit it now. Reporting on it now. Because I think that's the job. The idea that, well, you were a vaccine proponent. Why wouldn't I have been a vaccine proponent? Now there are questions. Oh, no, but I knew at the time. No, you didn't. What you knew was that there were people telling you to be resistant to what the government was telling you to do.
All right. I can't take any more of this guy. He's trying to rehabilitate his position. That's not like he was trying to share proper information at the time. It was obvious back then, too. Okay, that ivermectin was, you know, at the very least, you knew it was a drug to treat humans. Now, it's important that you understand all this is going on because they're not giving up. Like, you may think to yourself, well, they really screwed up. They'll never do this again. No, no, no. Oh, no. Let's listen to the CDC director talking about the new vaccine in the fall. This is the new vaccine or new CDC director.
We need to see everyone get an updated flu shot and an updated COVID vaccine. We also shared on Friday that we expect and anticipate there's going to be an updated COVID vaccine coming this fall, right? So plan now, yeah. Right? It's March, so you can think ahead when you're going to get your flu shot in the fall, you're going to get another updated COVID vaccine. And the reason for it is because this virus continues to change.
They don't care. They don't care that they got their hand in the caught in the cookie jar. They're going to continue with it. And worse than that, they realize that a lot of people are not going to buy into this in the future. And so they're trying to come up with the WHO, World Health Organization, with the pandemic treaty. And I want you to listen to one of the MEPs at the European Union, Dr. Meryl Nass. I want you to listen to her talk about what we can expect from the World Health Organization. Listen to this, the World Pandemic Treaty.
We're undergoing a soft coup, and the idea is to create a whole new set of laws and ignore the existing human rights laws and other laws under the pretext of pandemic preparedness and the biosecurity agenda. The WHO is developing through all its nations, but with the WHO director and the United States in charge, a pandemic treaty and amendments to the existing international health regulations that will remove the human rights protections currently embedded in the IHRs, will enforce surveillance censorship, get rid of freedom of speech, require governments to censor and only push a single narrative. Also, we will be subject, if they can make this work, to vaccines developed in 100 days.
Okay, that goes on for another few minutes, talking about all the things that they intend to do using the power of the World Health Organization through this pandemic treaty. If you guys don't speak up and demand free speech, if you don't speak up and demand to have freedom of your own health care, you're going to be open to the same problems that we had during the last COVID pandemic. This is not going away. This is not the end of that problem, even though we've shown them to be, in my opinion, I think I've made a great case. They were actively lying to us in order to achieve wealth, political power, and all sorts of things. So, be on guard. I hope that helped clear some things up. I'm really going to focus in the coming weeks and months about independent thinking and how to think for yourself and how to spot the areas where they're trying to manipulate us and trying to push the narrative that they want us to see. All right. Thanks for joining us. This is Dr. Scott Barber on the Doctor's Lounge. You're listening to me on America's Web Radio. Everybody have a great week, and I will see you next time.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.